Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, good morning to you. 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Victor Iverson is here. He is a county commissioner. For how long now you've been a county commissioner?
Well, I've been a county commissioner since 2014, so 10 years.
10 years. All right. You got the world's problem solved?
I wish. No. But yeah. We live in a great county, and fortunately, with the great people that we have here, we don't have a lot of the problems that other communities face, and so I feel very fortunate to represent the people of Washington County.
But one problem we do have is traffic.
Yeah.
And our good friends from the BLM with their, what do they call it, supplemental environmental SEIP thing, said, no, you can't have the Northern Corridor. We talked about it. I think probably 5 times in the last 2 weeks on this show, and we had Celeste Malloy on yesterday talking about it, but now we've got a county commissioner here, and we need to get the lowdown here, because at this point, well, let's do basics first.
Yeah.
Vic, let's talk about what the Northern Corridor is, how it came about, and then where we're at now.
Exactly. And some of your listeners probably are familiar with some of the words and things we're going to say about the Northern Corridor, but you're right. It's in the news. We expect the BLM to basically issue their supplemental, where they're going to tell us that the corridor route that was designated in the last administration is not acceptable. And they've done a couple things that are crazy. They're going to basically say that we should go down and build the road on the Red Hills Parkway, take out all those businesses in the lower part of the industrial park, and basically build it where it's impossible to build. And I'm sure that some of your listeners are aware that we've been talking about this corridor for over 20 years, and we've known that we need this corridor. And if you're starting to feel the backup like me when you come on and off of Boulevard, you recognize that we need it. And Mother Nature, I've said this before on your show, you know, she's created this beautiful landscape for us around here, but it's a pretty rugged landscape, and especially when you go to build roads. And so, you know, we feel that they violated the law. We have filed one lawsuit against them already. Once we have the supplemental EIS, I think you can expect that Washington County, along with the state of Utah, will file additional lawsuits. The change in administration will be good for us once those people are in place, because this is so partisan and so ideologically driven. And we feel that we have multiple grounds to turn this back. And I have to tell people, because I do know that there are listeners here, especially those that live up in that beautiful Green Springs area, who are concerned about this road and its impact on their lives. There's a couple myths going on out there. One is that this road will open up development on the Desert Reserve, which is absolutely not the case. But I think everybody needs to be reassured, and I've told everybody, it will be a beautiful parkway. Not a highway. I don't like how they call it a highway. It's a parkway, right? And it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to have recreational opportunities along it as far as you know, bike paths and other things, but we'll be able to do this in a way that's very respectful of the landscape. But more importantly, it'll help us have the traffic flow that we need across our communities. It's absolutely necessary. A lot of people say, well, why can't you not do it? And it used to be that we'd say, well, the traffic's going to get bad. Today, the traffic is bad.
It is.
I think people need to recognize that it's going to get a lot worse. And if we don't get this, what I believe will be a beautiful road built out across that 4 miles of reserve.
So the thing that people maybe need to understand is there is no way to get from the freeway to Santa Clara Ivins except right now to go through St. George. That's the only way to get there.
Yep.
And so this Northern Corridor was really, I think, great forethought by the people that came before us, before you and I, saying we need this road because it'll help alleviate the mess that is, you know, the boulevard is turning into. And even, like you mentioned, the backup on the exits and things like that, that we need something to get through there. The BLM is, I guess it's not officially out yet, right? The supplemental environmental impact study?
No, it's not out. We expect it to be coming. We've been told that it's coming. That was prior to the election. I think that everybody involved knows what's going to happen because of the election, that more than likely we'll be able to turn this back. But
so let's talk about the reality of what they want us to do, and that's basically turn Red Hills Parkway into a belt route, a freeway.
Yeah.
Is that even in the realm of, I mean, what would have to happen for that to actually take place?
Well, there's a couple things. It would only be on one way on. So, for example, once you got on that route, you would have to come all the way over to Ivins or over to Bluff and Red Hills Parkway to turn around and go back the other way. Another thing is that there are certain in traffic planners, and this is the thing that's interesting, because as you probably picked up, we have an environmental group, at least they claim to be environmental, called Conserve Southwest. And they basically went and hired a Boston interior designer who called himself a traffic planner to basically tell us that we needed to give up cars and that would solve all of our problems. Well, okay. I guess if we gave up cars, it would solve our problems, but it'd create a lot of other ones. So basically what they're saying is that we need an on and off ramp right as you come through the cut in the hill there, right in that black, you know, the right there by Four Master.
Mm-hmm.
And there's simply not the space there. And then after that, we'd have to go through and purchase all of the businesses along there, because we would ruin their businesses, and that would be millions and millions of dollars. And then we'd probably have to come up and take the hotels out at the top of, you know, over
all
there.
All those new fancy hotels. Over
well, the ones, there. It's not the fancy ones, but it's the ones right at the top of, right as you turn into town there up above Wendy's.
On the 1000 East?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just not practical. And I've never seen a case where BLM has said, you know what, as a part of our planning, we're going to tell you to go build it someplace that we don't have any jurisdiction over. So they don't really have the right to tell us where to build it. And I'm going to say something that's a little bit controversial, but those who know me know that I do this from time to time.
This is Victor Iverson, and his phone number. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Vic.
The deep state doesn't reside just in Washington, D.C. It resides also in Washington County.
Really?
There are individuals who are very much behind this, who are in the BLM. And I've mentioned Donna Ferris Raleigh, who's the director of the National Conservation Area. And she, I believe, has cost this county tens of millions of dollars by gumming up the works all the time. And this is, once again, her. You know, she's right in the middle of this, and I know that's controversial, but I need to speak truth. And the truth of it is that we just had an election, and I pray that what's going to happen is we're going to see a downsizing of the federal government, because I believe the greatest threat to America today is not China, it's not Russia, it's the administrative state. And this is another example of the administrative state and their exercise of power. And we went through this process. We went through a very deliberate process. We've had a congressional bill prior to our process that they ignored. And they ignored Congress. And then we went through an administrative process where we set aside 6,000 acres down by Bloomington. I know some of your listeners are down there. And 3,000 of it belongs to the BLM. And then 3,000 of it belongs to CITLA. Well, CITLA has been trying to play nice for a long time with the reserve and get their trades and stuff. And recently, as they saw the writing on the wall, they said, you know, we're denying our constitutional mandate to take economic advantage of these properties. We're going to go ahead and start the process to possibly opening that up. This is areas that are people recreate there. People enjoy this land. And the county and our, you know, working through this, we said, let's set aside this land. It'll have multiple benefits to the community. And what has happened is that people are being misled when they're being told that you can deny the Northern Corridor and at the same time keep what's known as Zone 6. And so we're working through that. I think at the end of the day, we'll be able to work through that. But I just want people to know that they need to know the facts. And the facts are is that I feel that Washington County citizens are being mistreated on this whole process. So I don't know. So you probably heard that before.
So Les Molloy talked a lot about federal government overreach. Now, the federal government has, I forget the number, but a large percentage of Utah is owned by the federal government.
Yep.
So what, when they start reaching in, you mentioned they're trying to tell us to do something that with property they don't even own now, it just smacks of federal government overreach. It's all over it.
Well, and you've probably reported on and talked a little bit about the lawsuit that we've just barely, the state of Utah has launched. And we're a public land state. People need to know. All of us who live here, we appreciate and value our public lands. And what we're not asking to privatize it or to take it away or to make it not public. What we're asking is for common sense management, common sense solutions, you know, things that can win-win on the landscape rather than, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, the most environmentally responsible thing to do is to build the Northern Corridor. It'll mean that people won't be idling in traffic. You know, people will be able to get back and forth. We'll be able to do it in a responsible way. And it's the same way with some of these recreational lands that can serve both as recreational outlets to our community and improve our quality of life. At the same time, protect, threatened species and stuff and put it aside. So those of us who live here, we would make the argument that we're the stewards of this land and we take that stewardship very seriously. So
is there, I know you had a public meeting. Is there any resistance from the people of Washington County? Not the deep state or anything, just regular folks.
I think there is. I mean, there's two conversations here that are going on simultaneously. One is our wonderful recreation community that hasn't had all of the information. And so sometimes they're the young people. It was great to see young people who've probably never been to a public meeting coming out to the one that we had. And I think we had to educate them a little bit or provide them with more information about how Zone 6 came about. And also let them know that CITLA is not the enemy, but CITLA does have responsibility to school children. And then I think there is some of the community that is in the Green Springs area that I think rightfully is going, hey, I back up to the reserve. The road is awful close to my house. And I would say thing.
These people that built their house already knew about those people.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
My brother's one of them.
It wasn't disclosed. And frankly, to be honest with you, the county was arguing and the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Authority, was planning a road that was farther up.
Okay.
The biologists were the ones that came down and said, let's put it down so that we don't bisect as much as the reserve. It's not the preferred route of the county, but it was the only route we could get. Okay. Now, what we're finding, frankly, because there was always this argument, well, if you build a road through the middle of a desert reserve, the tortoises are going to get cut off from one another, which is a valid argument or a valid question. What the county has discovered is that, you know, the tortoises are more than happy to go through culverts and other things. And so we can create a road that the tortoise won't be bothered by and that they'll be able to go back and forth. And so... So anyway, I think that community rightfully is asking serious questions of the county. But the one that we had the meeting for mostly was just to let our recreational community know that the Zone 6 area was land that the county itself had set apart. Mostly, or a lot of it, was because we recognized the recreational value there. And so, because there was this idea that the county should go make CITLA whole by using tax dollars to do that. And we just had to inform them that wasn't going to be the case. But the CITLA was still at the table talking to us, even though they had started what is a fairly long process if they're going to take land out and do development agreements with us. So I think we had a good discussion. I think we won over a few people. So
going back to... it wasn't that long ago that you put Red Hills Parkway in that, you know, we all call it Turtle Road now.
Yeah, yeah.
How hard was it to get that road in compared to what we're going through now?
I think it was difficult. It was a little, so one of the things that's happened, the county actually did that lands bill that we talked about in 2009. Mm-hmm. And what people have to remember is the 2009 lands bill is, what created what's known as a national conservation area. National conservation areas are kind of this extra layer of protection designated by Congress. But the very bill that Congress voted to make it a national conservation area opposed to just a habitat conservation plan area is that it said that the Secretary of Interior shall designate a route for the Northern Corridor, which they've never done. And so in a lot of our arguments, we said, hey, look, you haven't even followed congressional law up to this point. And so, and the person that I mentioned, and I she knows that I have this contention with her, is that, you know, she's been known to say, well, Congress didn't read my manual or read the manuals of the BLM. Well, I'm sorry that Congress makes the law. BLM is supposed to follow it. So, so anyway, that's where we're at.
It's funny, you know, I mean, I remember when the road was built and we thought, well, if you see a tortoise, don't touch it.
Yeah.
Right. If you see it, you can be arrested. If there are tortoises in the middle of the road and you move it to the side of the road, somebody's going to, you know, the police are going to come and put cuffs on you. And I mean, that's kind of the feeling right now about these desert tortoises. Isn't that funny how that's turned, how it's become what it is?
Yeah. And I mean, but what people have to understand is when an animal is threatened or endangered under these federal laws, you know, we're supposed to create these plans to kind of basically maintain the population. And the county has done something very unique going back to 1996 when this was created, is that we, the county employees, are actually very involved in the management of the desert reserve. And you might ask why, and it's because through that management, our involvement, we have been able to preserve a lot of the historic access rights through hiking and recreating on the desert reserve. And so when people go out on these trails, you need to know that a lot of that's because the county's involved. And so we have some great staff who will come out and interact with the public and, you know, take the tortoise. And there's a whole process. If you find a tortoise outside the reserve, that they'll come and get the tortoise. They take it. We can't own tortoises as pets here in Washington County, which I feel kind of ripped off, because you can in Vegas, for example, Clark County, you can. You just can't right here. And so they'll take the tortoise, make sure it doesn't have some of the diseases, and then they'll let it into the wild, primarily down by what's known as Babylon Mills, which sits below Leeds, down by the river there, out on the sands a little bit. So that's where they've been putting a lot of the displaced tortoises. But you're right, people should, you know, be careful on those little guys.
Yeah, nobody's going to come cuff you, but you could get fined or get in a little bit of trouble if you mess with them.
I've told this story probably on this show. My fellow commissioners up in Iron County, of course, they have what do they have up there? Not the
prairie dog.
Prairie dogs.
Yeah, I lived there for 1 year and it was a thing.
Yep. So I had a county commissioner one time tell me, he's like, you know, down in Washington County, you guys have, you have the tortoise. Everybody likes the tortoise. They're nice. And we have this rodent up here, you know, that has the bubonic plague. And it's true, you know. And so if, as far as species go, I mean, they're quite majestic, actually. If you want to use the word majestic to describe something that crawls around on the ground, I mean, tortoises are, you know, kind of an animal that you know, they make you think. So,
I will say this: I lived in Cedar City 1 year, saw a few prairie dogs. They're kind of cool too. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why he was, you know, dissing on the prairie dog. Kind of cute, but they're not majestic though.
Yeah. Like tortoises. Well, I have to tell the story. We had this. If you go into our building there, you'll see kind of the display for tortoises there. And we had one that's been in captivity for a long time. And he'd actually become attached to one of our, we had this excellent employee that had worked all these years helping him. And they it was almost like they're very intelligent species. And both of them started getting a little depressed. He retired and the tortoise was there. And so they've worked it out to where they get to associate more with each
visitation
other.
Visitation rights.
Yeah, visitation rights. Yep, exactly. So.
Well, we got into a discussion yesterday on why some Disney characters can talk and others can't. The animals, you know.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, well, you know, I think if an animal could talk, it should be a tortoise.
Cause it really should.
They're pretty wise.
They would say, build that road. It's going to be
yes,
beautiful.
Yes, they would. We're going to go hang out in the culverts.
We're going to go hang out in the culverts, and it's going to be great. So.
All right, we're talking with Victor Iverson here on the Andy Griffin Show today.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. We did have a couple of callers last segment, but Vic and I got talking so much I didn't even go to phone.
Oh.
If they want to call back, though, 673-5890, you can text me. As always, text me at 435-467-5842. So, Victor, I asked Celeste Malloy about this yesterday, and I'll ask you. Everyday person, everyday citizen, I live in Middleton right now. I've lived in St. George. I lived in Washington. I lived in Hurricane. I've never lived in Santa Clara or Ivins, but I've lived in several different places in the county. And I'm trying to, the environmental impact thing and the tortoise, I'm trying to figure out, am I missing something? Is there something there that why the feds are trying to do this? Is there some kind of detail I'm not getting, or I don't think there is there?
Well, the Endangered Species Act is interesting. Species will come on, it's quite an easy process to list a species. It's a very difficult process to unlist a species. And so, as far as local government, we're just stuck with trying to deal with that law, right?
Right.
So, all of this, the habitat, the HCP, what it allows is it allows private property owners outside of that reserve to develop their property without having to individually deal with this Species Act.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to build and there's going to be tortoises there, what would they do? So that's kind of the reason the county's involved as heavily as we are. And we have a lot of endangered species. We have three or four fish. Now, there's different levels. Right now, the tortoise is technically designated as threatened. Threatened is different from endangered. There's different, kind of degrees of.
Is threatened worse or better than endangered?
Threatened is better. It means endangered is the worst.
Okay.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, we have to deal with that. The local government has to deal with it, and the county has taken it upon ourselves. Because the cities, you wouldn't want each city to have to deal with it. To basically come to these agreements so that all of the other property can be developed. And basically, Washington County has been able to grow and prosper without having to deal with this. You were probably in here when they built Tuacon, and mm-hmm. that was when this thing kind of came. They were in the middle of construction, and all of a sudden, there was a couple tortoises on the construction site, and it really was a big deal here.
Yeah.
And so,
what year was that? Do you remember?
It was the early 90s.
Yeah, I was new here. Yeah,
I think that we put together the reserve in 1996. The county did, and frankly, the county, Washington County, has tried very hard to be a good partner with our federal agencies and deal with them and kind of deal with reality.
Yeah, and so that's often the federal government lacks common sense and reality, though.
It does, and so I'm very optimistic, I know I sounded probably a little pessimistic in the first hour. I'm optimistic that this election and the dialogue that I'm hearing on a national level, that we're going to reevaluate as a nation and as a people kind of how we view government regulation, because if we administer these things with common sense, I think we can find ourselves at a win-win situation. A situation where we preserve landscapes and habitat, and at the same time we enjoy the land, we recreate on the land, and we still get our infrastructure and other things that we need to live. And so I'm very optimistic about Elon Musk and Ravaik.
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
And just everything that they're proposing. And I'm kind of excited about this new opportunity that America has, and hopefully it won't be short-lived, and we can kind of come together and not have as much contention.
Department of Government Efficiency, right? Elon and yep. Vivek Ramaswamy. I know you've always been kind of a no-nonsense guy. You're like, too much government, too much red tape, too much. And the promise is, and we don't know because they haven't even, President Trump hasn't even been inaugurated yet, but the promise is that the federal government is going to get, hopefully they're going to take a paring knife and cut off some of the excess. Do you think it's really going to happen? And will it affect this?
Well, I hope it happens because the reason America voted the way they did was that they were really feeling the crunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not right that American young people can't buy homes, and it's taking two incomes to make a living, and so on and so forth. And but yet, the cost of regulation, not the cost of taxes, the cost of regulation is estimated at $1.7 trillion a year. That's what it requires of our economy to comply with agencies and rules that have been made. And so, you know, a lot of people don't know that the Supreme Court ruled in what's called the Chevron case this last summer. Basically what that means is that the agencies will no longer, you know, be deferred to on expertise, that expertise can be introduced into the process. We had a very kind of a startling ruling out of the D.C. Circuit just last month that said that the manuals for NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Act, mm-hmm. That basically those were all wrong and that they shouldn't be used. I mean, there's a whole plethora of agencies and rules and consultants that operate off that rule book that was just barely declared to be unlawful. So I think it's I'm very optimistic for America. I've never been more optimistic. At the same time, you know, it's early. You know, I feel that we're at a turning point. So I don't want to come across, I hope a lot of listeners know how much I truly do love our landscape and our recreational opportunities. And as a county, we've preserved those. We've worked on trails and just kind of, we have this, you know, vision that we can maintain our quality of life by people being able to access and enjoy the public lands around them. And so that's really kind of been our goal. But we do need desperately the transportation routes that we need. What's kind of sad, and I'm not a pro-growth or an anti-growth guy, I'm kind of a realist guy, is that we are growing some of the plans we had. You know, we thought, well, in 20 years we're going to need this road, or 20 years we're going to need to do that, or 10 years we'll do that. All of those time frames
they're here now.
They're here, yeah. And it's scary because people shouldn't. I hope people know that you know, we've been working on these plans. We've recognized the need will come. I hope people know that we're trying hard to make their lives easier by creating the infrastructure that they can enjoy.
Do we need the government to be pared down a little bit? The last show that was on, Brandon Hansen was on here, mm-hmm. and his guest, his friend with him was Dallas, one of his agents, and he made, it was a weird kind of offhand comment about income and stuff, and he said, yeah, sometimes a self-employed person will come in and they make maybe $300,000 a year, and so I try to guesstimate how much taxes they pay, and it's probably $100,000, and I'm like, did you hear what he just said? And I didn't say anything during the show, but I'm thinking about it now. If you made $300,000, there's a good chance you paid $100,000 of taxes on your $300,000. That's too much, Vic.
Yeah.
It's too much.
It is. Yeah.
We need the federal government to be chopped down and quit paying them so dang much money. I was a freelancer, you know, for most of my career, where I was self-employed, and, you know, and then we had to settle the taxes at the end of the year and everything. And so it never really struck me until I started working here full time every day, and I get my check and there'd be this gigantic piece of the pie, you know. I mean, imagine a pumpkin pie and one third of it is cut out. And I was just like, you know, because the last time I had a full-time job where the paycheck was 30 years ago, and it was a little different 30 years ago than it is now. It just blew me away how big that tax burden was.
Yeah, and some would argue that if you had that money and you put it back out into the economy, you know, how much that would help. And I will say this, even in local government, it's tough. You know, you take somebody that comes in, they want to build. You know, there is, you know, land use laws that people have. There is kind of this order that we've decided as a society that we want to have. Mm-hmm. I argue that there's property rights on both sides of the fence. At the same time, I wish we could have less government, but yet we need government. Yeah. But yet we need to keep the cost of government as low as possible. And what government spends needs to be spent on benefiting of the larger community, right? So,
sure.
At Washington County, we try to do that. It's hard, but at the same time, we got to pay for jails, we got to pay for courts, we got to pay for keeping our community safe.
All right, Victor, I got to do a quick commercial here, and we'll take a little break. More with Victor. I know he had something, a calendar item to talk about too in a minute, do want to talk for just a minute about the Ducrest Monument Company now. If you lose a loved one, obviously it's a sad day, and you go into the funeral home and you just kind of go in and do what they tell you to do. But I'm here to tell you, you don't have to do that. You want to plan your funeral for your loved one, but you can go out and get your own monument for them. It will save you probably in the neighborhood of $1,000 or more if you go to someone like the Ducrest Monument Company. They're located in Washington, 504 West Buena Vista Boulevard, and they feature custom monuments from people who care. They're a family-owned local business, and I can tell you, I went in and had a headstone done, a monument for my, I don't want to use it anytime soon, but for my and my wife's grave, and it's pretty cool. I got to go into their design center, sit down with the lady who designs it, and she had a big screen TV over her head so that I could see everything she was doing on the screen. And I didn't like maybe the location of where she put one of the graphics on our headstone. And anyway, bottom line is we got exactly what we want. I have a picture of my phone of my headstone, and I know a lot of you got to see it at the home show here a few weeks ago. It's from Ducrest Monument Company. They do a fantastic job. And by the way, right now, if you'll call Ducrest Monument Company, I will give you that phone number here in just a second. If you will call them, they will give you 10% off a monument. And that is pretty cool, because if you think about that, a monument might run you $3,000-$4,000, 10%. That's $300 or $400 off, right off the top. If you just mentioned that you heard about it on the Andy Griffin Show, the phone number is 435-962-2879 for the Ducrest Monument Company. The Ducrest Monument Company is. Let's try that again. That's better. AG approved. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Obviously, we've been talking a lot about the Northern Corridor, what might happen. So right now, Vic, and we'll get to this other thing in a minute, but right now, as far as Northern Corridor is concerned, it's on hold, and we maybe not even try to do anything until the new administration takes over in January?
Yeah, I would expect in the next few days we will have the official decision from the BLM supplemental.
Environmental.
And then from there, we'll start making decisions based on that, on what to do. And like I said, we have a lawsuit. The lawsuit's been temporarily kind of put on hold, but not really. And we'll take a look at that decision and decide. And we'll be having meetings as well with the state of Utah.
Okay.
Because they're involved with this right away. It's going to be a state route.
So right now, just hang on, folks. We'll get to the bottom of things over the next couple of months. So.
You know, and I tell people, look, when the pioneers came into this country, they had to deal with the harshness of the environment to survive, and it made them tougher people. Today, we have to deal with government bureaucracy, and it'll make us tougher as well. So.
And by the way, air conditioning didn't become commonplace until the late 30s.
Yep. Yeah.
1930s. Yeah. So, yeah, they had to deal with this area for, almost 100 years with no air conditioning.
I think I heard the story. Somebody was asking an old timer, when did St. George really, change? And he says it changed on, August 5th, 1966, something like that. And they're like, well, that's a very, certain date. And he's like, that's when the S1 family got central air conditioning and stuff. So I don't know if that's a true story, but I think it's probably true. So central air changed our town for sure. So
that and refrigeration.
Yep.
Two big things. Yeah. All right, real quick, I want to talk about the vote. Canvassing, tell us about that.
Yeah, so today we actually sit as a board of canvassers at our commission meeting. Our clerk auditor, Ryan Sullivan, has finished up the elections. happens. A lot of times people think, well, boy, it's 2 weeks later. You know, election night has come and gone. You know, people don't realize that when they drop their ballots off, you know, they're counted. But there's a lot of what you call provisional ballots. There's a lot of ballots that need to be cured. In other words, there's some sort of flaw with them.
Yeah.
And so there's...
Brandon Hanson told me they every time, because his signature it never matches it. So
Yeah. Some people have that where it's... I've heard that from other people where their signature doesn't match. We had something this year, and this is... Presidential elections always do this, where we had what we call provisional ballots. It's really kind of almost same day registration, right? Where they come in.
Right. There was a lot of that, wasn't there?
They want to vote. So we had over 3,000 of those.
Wow.
And you have to wait till all the other ballots are counted to make sure that that individual didn't vote before. And then once you've made sure that that isn't the case, then you can come back and make sure he's a citizen and so on and so forth, and cast and count his votes. So our clerk auditor's office, our clerk's office has just been working overtime, you know. And one thing that we did a few years ago, if you remember, there has and continues to be a lot of discussion about importance of election integrity.
Right.
And so we started hand counting certain precincts, like we'd randomly take precincts and hand count them. Yesterday we did our audit, and now since we were doing it, the state of Utah has actually started mandating all counties count a certain amount of hand count, a certain number of precincts. And so we've done that, and the clerk's office has been working really hard curing those ballots. But today we will accept their results. In other words, they will present their results to us, and as the Board of Canvassers, we sit on that and we'll vote on it. So congratulations to everybody. We've finished elections. It'll be made official today. So
nice. Adam Snow getting reelected. How important was that for the commission right now?
It's important. It's important that you have three people that can work together. And a lot of times county government's a little unique. We're not state government. We're not city government. We sit as both managers, administrators, and executives and also the legislative body of the county. And so it's important that you have three people that work together. And I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with Adam, and he was elected with resounding results, I think 70%. And we always joke around, he's like the high vote getter, you know. I say things that are a little
You tick people off occasionally, Vic.
I think I'm a little salty at times, and the voters, sometimes they'll show that.
I will say this. Adam says some of the same stuff that you do, but he says it differently, and so it's not as controversial.
How is that? I'm just trying to be, direct, and, they say clarity is kindness or something like that, but sometimes that's not the case. So maybe I should... take the opportunity to apologize to anybody out there listening that I might have been too direct to. I love my county, and I apologize if I've set somebody off.
My in-laws are from New Jersey, so I'm used to directness because they don't mince words in New Jersey. They tell you like it is. If you look fat that day, they'll tell you look fat today. That's fine. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. So
it is true. Sometimes we can be a little too direct, and luckily we have what's called Utah Nice, but that's it has its pros and cons, right? Sometimes you can
it can be bad. Yes.
Not be as direct as you should be, but
I'm not going to mention his name, but I covered as a sports writer a coach years ago who was the nicest guy you're ever going to want to meet. But there came a point he needed to be fired, and I wrote a story about it. And he was, he called me and wanted to talk, and I just said, "Coach, I feel bad, and you're a super nice guy, but." If you're not winning games, you're not winning games.
Yep.
And that's the truth of the matter. So,
well, we have a great county, Andy, and I don't think I'll get a chance to do this before. Or I just want to wish everybody just a real happy holidays, and Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays. Hopefully you have all of your family over, regardless of who they voted for in the presidential election, and take an opportunity to give thanks. And fortunately, I think in our county, we have a lot of families that are united in their political leanings. And frankly, I'm going to say this. In Washington County, our Democrats are really nice people, too. I mean, some of the, the ones that I've met anyway are nice. I feel like overall we have a good county, and even good people that move here and are new to our community. I've found that our citizens are the best. It's the only thing that matches the majesty of the beauty around here is the goodness of our people.
The people and the Dixie spirit.
Yeah, it is.
Last Saturday, I was playing pickleball. Just a bunch of people got to play pickleball, and a guy comes over to me, knowing I'm a radio host, says, "Hell, let's talk about the election. What did you think about this and that and the other thing?" And I said, "Okay, I have two rules. Number one, you don't talk politics during pickleball, and number two, you don't talk politics during family gatherings. So yeah, we're gonna leave the politics alone. During those occasions."
I have that problem at church, right? I kind of feel like I shouldn't talk politics, and people want to, and I engage, but I try not to. So
we're at church. We should talk about Jesus, not about...
It really doesn't bring the spirit in if you're talking about things that divide us. So,
Victor Iverson, anything exciting coming up in your life personally or whatever? We got 1 minute. So
it's great. We're going to have a commission meeting. If we do have a meeting... Prior to that, starting at 3:30, if anybody wants to come down and visit with us about something prior to our meeting.
So 3:30 is open to public?
Yeah, it's our kind of our public town hall style meeting. So
3:30, anyway. And then the actual meeting starts at 4?
At 4, yep.
Okay.
We have a lot of things. We're going to be discussing our preliminary budget. It's going to be presented to us by our clerk auditor, Ryan Sullivan, as well. It's that time of season. So.
Yeah, I love it. That's perfect. Victor Iverson, thank you so much for coming. It's always a pleasure to see Vic, even sometimes when he says things that are controversial. I kind of like it. So, thank you, Vic. Good to talk to you. More Andy Griffin Show tomorrow. In fact, tomorrow we have an interesting show. We're going to have Dave Romer talk firearms with us a little bit. Also, a little bit from the Chamber of Commerce. It's the Andy Griffin Show here on KDXU. Talk to you later.